So today we're going to look at general and special revelation. The question we're basically answering is, where does the knowledge of God come from? If we're talking about theology, is really a knowledge of God from how he reveals, we need to know and ascertain, where does this revelation come from? Where does this knowledge come from? You know, before we ascertain and make up and say this is a doctrine and that is a doctrine, we must account for how God makes himself known. How God makes himself known, because that is the foundation upon which everything else is built. Now, generally there are, basically there are two distinct sources of God's self-revelation, or God's disclosure, or how God makes himself known. And theologians have put these under two brackets, or two categories. The first category is what they call general revelation. General revelation. And then the second category they call special revelation. So today, our class is going to be built on these two. General revelation and special revelation. Now, from the onset, I need to say that the two kinds of revelation are not competitors, but they are partners. They work together. So let's start by understanding what general revelation is. General revelation is God's self-disclosure through the created world, human reason, and moral conscience. Because basically it's God's revelation through nature. Okay? And that can be the created world, human reason, and moral conscience. Now, general revelation are ways of knowing, or at least thinking about God, that are available to all people, everywhere, and at all times. And general revelation does not require a specific or a special kind of divine communication. We're going to see some of these examples in the scriptures. Okay, that's general revelation. It is general in two senses. One, it's general by the fact that it is universally available. Everybody in the world has access to God's general revelation. So number one is because it's universally available. And then secondly, it conveys general truths of God's existence. It conveys general truths about God's existence, God's power, God's moral character, right? So, it is general. When you're looking in philosophy at what they call the arguments for the existence of God, you find that many of those arguments, or some of those arguments, fall under what is called general revelation. You have what they call the cosmological argument. You have what they call the moral argument. That the existence of morality, or a moral standard, or a moral compass for every man. Do you know, you don't have to be born again. You don't have to be a Christian to believe that murder is bad, right? Both Christians and non-Christians say, so that's morality. Okay? So, apologists will ask, well, what can you attribute to the presence of a moral code if there is no God? So I have a class on the existence of God, which I have been debating whether to teach or not. But we'll see as the series progresses. Because some of these arguments may become, you may feel like they are technical. Because again, for you, you have no battle or question about the existence of God. But some people do. And when somebody is many times denying the existence of God, it's not the Bible you will go to show them that God exists. Many times you're going to appeal to the general revelation. Are we clear? So in there is also why you have natural theology, something which would be called natural theology. A knowledge of God drawn from creation and reason alone. So many times that is like the basis for apologetics in that sense. Okay? Whereby if you are contending with atheists about God, you're going to use a lot of natural theology. Okay? Knowledge of God drawn from creation and reason alone. So general revelation does not just deal with created things like creation, like where does everything come from, but it also involves the moral conscience, human reason, things like that. Okay? You hear those arguments, the teleological argument, the cosmological argument. How many of you have heard of things like that? Doesn't matter. Natural revelation. Let's go to the Psalms. Go to Psalm 19. I'm going to read you something, then I'll tell you. Let's go to Psalm 19, all of us, please. So this is evidence of the existence of general revelation using special revelation. Well, when it comes to special revelation, but I will show you, because the written word falls under special revelation. Okay? So this is the special revelation talking about general revelation. Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. Can you see that? That the sky is proclaiming. So in other words, the created world, the created nature, is giving a revelation of God. That's what we call general revelation. Are we together, saints? There's no speech, nor are there words whose voice is not heard. The eighth psalm, again, it may be a little bit of a stretch, but the psalmist looks at the created order and what? Wonders and worships. How, O Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babies and infants, you have established strength because of your foes. Verse 3. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is man that you're mindful of him? The sons of man that you care for him. So, in there, the psalmist also is looking at creation and is drawn into a reprise. Is that what they call it in music? Reprise. Right? Or if in writing they would call it, let me not butcher something. Romans chapter 1, this perhaps is the most the one that comes to the mind of many. Romans chapter 1. Let's start from verse 19. Let's start from 18. Are we all there? For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. Okay? For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. Well, how? Well, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. So how are they suppressing the truth? They're suppressing the truth because everything that we're saying, what can be known about God's eternal power and divine nature, is clearly shown how? Through, can be perceived since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. Are you seeing that? Romans chapter 2. So, those three passages I've read are dealing with, in the definition of general revelation, they are dealing with the created world. But we said general revelation also covers human reason and moral conscience. Now, in Romans chapter 2, to the Gentiles, Paul appeals to that. Romans chapter 2, verse 14. Are you with me? For when the Gentiles, 2:14, for when the Gentiles who do not have the law would have been like God's written will. For when the Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do what the law requires. Whoa, hold up. When the Gentiles who have no law do by nature the things that the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. Look at verse 15. They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them. So, are you seeing the moral compass, the conscience which is within every single person becomes a judge? Okay, becomes a proof of the revelation of the knowledge of God and what it requires from humanity. That's why they tell you it takes a lot to take someone's life. Because there's a written law in the heart of every man about, you know, the sanctity of life. And it takes a gross rewiring for a person to do it without remorse. Are you seeing what I'm talking about? So again, the created world, moral conscience within the heart, that thing becomes a revelation of God. So, general revelation operates through at least two channels. It operates through the external order of creation and the internal order of conscience. The external order of creation, the internal order of conscience. So, which reminds me. So, one of the questions that may come up that what we have learned so far can help answer is, somebody asks, what about those people who have never heard the gospel? What about those people who died, even if nobody knows them? What about those people who died those days before the white man brought the gospel? Well, Paul tells us, whatever may be known about God has been clearly made known to them, even his eternal power and divine nature. so that they are without excuse. These are the Gentiles. So, the external order of creation and the eternal order of conscience. Back then, you know, way back in ancient days, people would look at the stars and they say, wow, they are gods. And they would worship. They would build an altar. They would call upon those gods. Now, let's look at what general revelation can do. General revelation can't do everything, but it certainly can do certain things. It's not insignificant. It can do some real, authentic theological work. Number one, it points to the Creator. Okay? So this existence of a... You know, like how a scientist... You know, people like Newton, what? How they came up saying, you know, there must be a God. They look at the intricate design. You know, they study. You know, like I say, if you really do science very well, it will lead you to God. You study at the intricacies. You look at the DNA. You look at how things are holding. You look at the vastness of the universe. You just say, you know what? This great design, there must be a creator for it. For some of you, stay in Kampala all your life. But there are some places you can go up country, you look at the beauty and the order of things, the mountains, the rivers, and you can say, wow, God is there. So the structured cosmos, you know, how your planet is in space, you know, how is God sustains breathing and all those things that we say, you know what? There is a creator. This is Acts chapter 17. Paul in Athens enters and says, wow, the God who created all things does not dwell in temples made with human hands. He does not need as though he needed anything to be worshipped by. In him we move, in whom have our being, you know his rhetoric there. Number two, general revelation establishes a moral structure. A moral structure. Justice, you know. The recognition that some things are wrong. Right, the things are wrong. If you know, it doesn't matter if seven people who have seven different beliefs all went and they were invited to a wedding of a 30-year-old man with a 7-year-old girl. Everybody would just say it is wrong. But why is it wrong? For all the different, you know, because there's that moral structure that is established by that general revelation which exists in the heart of every man or every individual. What else? Number three. General revelation leaves all people without excuse. Nobody has an excuse. Romans 1:20. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world, in the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. So it leaves us without any excuse. However, general revelation has limitations too. What can't it do? Well, general revelation cannot reveal sin's depth. The depth of human depravity cannot be something you see or know through general revelation. In fact, for some of us, as you know, we minister to people, some people don't even believe they have sinned, right? They have general revelation, but they don't believe they have sinned. Because that's not something you find in general revelation. General revelation cannot name Jesus. It cannot say he's a savior. It cannot tell you that he's incarnate. He incarnated in the womb of Mary. It cannot tell you that he died on the cross. It cannot tell you that he resurrected. He has given us new life by his spirit in us and with us. It cannot explain salvation. That he became a man. That he suffered. It cannot. It cannot. We cannot show that God became human. For those limitations, we need the second kind, special revelation. So what is special revelation? Special revelation is God's direct personal self-disclosure. It's a communication that goes beyond what creation and conscience can provide. Yeah? It goes beyond what creation and conscience can provide. It is special because it's not universally found in nature, but given to particular people at particular times, particular places, carrying specific content. We usually find this in the written word, in the scriptures. Now, scriptures in themselves, well, we must know that special revelation did exist before the scriptures, but for us it is captured in the scriptures, that God spoke before there was a Bible. Okay? The Bible is like the this end point of the gathering of God's special revelation through his special envoys at through different times, through different seasons, in different spaces, in different places, and in different ways. So you have God's speakings. God spoke before these things were written. I was you people are over respecting the Bible. Which Bible did Moses read? I think that is misunderstanding the nature of God's communication. I'm going to read Hebrews 1 later in a few moments. But I just want to tell you that God spoke. The Bible itself introduces, on its first page, God speaking. It should be Genesis 1:3, right? God said, Genesis 1:28, and God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful, multiply. So God has been speaking throughout the history of this created world. God spoke even after the fall. Genesis 3:15, I'll put enmity between you and the woman, between you and the woman and her seed. Right? God spoke. Exodus 3:14, God spoke when he's revealing himself to Moses and what he shall tell the children of Israel. When they ask me who has sent me, what do I say? Say, I am that I am. I have something on the divine name. Maybe we'll release it in the beams. Eh? I think it's there. I've not taught it. And if I taught it publicly, the divine name, I am that I am. What that name means, that is where you have Yahweh.
Okay.
Yahweh. Yahweh meaning to be, the God who exists, the God who is, the self-existent God. So he has been speaking. He has been revealing himself. But different ways. What are different modes of special revelation? Hebrews chapter 1. Are we together? Let me try to make this short. Hebrews chapter 1. Verse 1. Are we there? I can quote this thing in King James. I'm going to read it in ESV. Hebrews chapter 1. Has those beautiful words sundry times and diverse manners. Polymeros and polytropos. The Greek. Okay, can we do? 1 to 3. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. So, God spoke to the fathers long ago, at many times, and in many ways. What again is a special revelation? Direct, God's direct personal self-disclosure, personal communication, personal revelation of himself. The writer of Hebrews tells us that he did it in different ways and at different times. So we're going to look at some of those ways. Can we look at some of those ways? One of those ways he revealed himself to them is through dreams. There was a dreams. Joseph, for instance, God spoke to Joseph through a sequence of dreams. They were symbolic and they were predictive. Genesis 37, 5 and 10. Who else do you remember who God spoke to in dreams? Who just did his, who learned this recently? Daniel, Abraham. All these people, God spoke to them in dreams. Abraham, Genesis 17, no, 15. Was it 15 or 16? Or 17? Why a deep sleep fell on him and they told him about his ancestors. Is it 16, 15 or 17? Read all of them. But dreams has been a way he has disclosed himself long time ago through his servants. Daniel 7, 1 and 2. Now, dreams are a recurring channel of special revelation in both the Old and the New Testament. Secondly, visions. Visions. Isaiah is among the most theologically rich books in the Old Testament. But you have that overwhelming encounter of Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 6. The year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. Right? Speaks about the train of his robe filling the whole temple. Speaks about Keruvim with him, creatures. And he sends him. In the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah 6, 1. I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Verse 8. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? Then I said, here I am. Send me. And I know maybe some of the people have told you to seek that encounter. You will seek.
Because you see, everybody who keeps pressuring us to do these things never tells us that the people these things happen to, we are not seeking them. Isn't it true? Isn't it weird that Isaiah wasn't on a certain mountain saying, Lord, I want to see your temple. I want to see the train of your robe. I told you. Sometimes some people are people who are seeing Jesus every week. Who are seeing God. This man saw the Lord and said, woe, because the word woe is woe in Uganda. Woe, I am a man of unclean lips. It's like he was eavesdropping in the king's chambers and they're like, who is there? That's how he narrates the encounter. He said, pardon me, my Lord. And what? What did the angel do? Oh, it got the call and put it on his lips. So, these visions, these dreams are frequent, are quite, can I use frequent? Let me say consistent. Old and New Testament. That's another way that God discloses himself. Say dreams, visions, special revelation. Third way is through the angel of the Lord. This is an Old Testament thing, right? We have seen that figure appear in the Old Testament, right? Sometimes we're wondering, is it the Lord himself or a messenger, a special messenger of him? He has appeared to Abraham in Genesis 22. In Exodus 3, he has appeared to Moses in the burning bush. And he's identified as the Lord, as Yahweh in those instances. Amen. Definitely that figure shall come up again, so don't worry. Let's just read that Genesis 22, 11 and 12. Genesis 22. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing I have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. I know you fear the Lord. You have not held your only son from me. The angel of the Lord is not speaking, but he's also saying from me. But what he's saying, what Abraham did, is the fearing of the Lord. You know what I'm trying to say? So sometimes it is blurry. It's like there are two figures, but also this angel of the Lord figure takes on the personality of Yahweh. Another way, number four, of special revelation is theophany. Everybody say theophany. You know what theophany is? Theophany, you basically have two Greek words. You have theos, which is God, and phaineni, to appear. So this is a physical manifestation of the divine presence. Oh yeah, there it is. A physical manifestation of a divine presence. How many of you have ever had a theophany? Anybody? The pillar of cloud and fire in the wilderness, Exodus 13, 21 and 22. In Exodus 40, remember what happened? In Exodus 40, the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle at its dedication. Exodus 40, 34 to 38.
No, is it the dedication? This is after the dedication. And then the other Theophany, which I've told is one of my best passages in the Bible, is around Moses' encounter at Sinai with the divine glory. Now, these were intentional acts of God showing himself before his people. These things are very, very intentional. And I'm saying, if God even chooses or chose a theophanistic, I don't know if that word exists, manifestation in our midst, it is purposeful. These this is about how God wants to reveal and show to his people and assure of his people. You remember Exodus 33:18-19? Moses asks to see the face of the Lord. Asks to see the Lord, right? Asks to see the glory of the Lord. Please show me your glory. And God said, I'll make my goodness pass before you. I'll proclaim my name, Yahweh. I'll be gracious to whom I'll be gracious. And I'll show mercy to whom I'll show mercy. But he said to him, you cannot see my face. For man shall not see me and live. Amina. Theo. An intentional act of God showing himself through the created order. Number five. Some of you have never heard of this. Or if you came across it in your Bible reading plan, you bypassed it and put it in the category of, this is not written for me. How many of you have had that category before? This one was not written for me. For us. All of us had that one, right? Here he's not talking to us. You didn't have that category? Number five is Urim and Thummim. Oh, so there's many of us have never heard about it. Urim and Thummim. I'm saying I'm a student for me now. You know, until today, scholars don't actually know what these two looked like. But they were objects within the high priest's breastplate, and they were used to inquire concerning the will of God. Usually specific in yes-no answers. So maybe you say, God, you know, like maybe David is praying, should I pursue or should I not pursue? I think that scenario, it's when in Kings, could be a case of Urim and Thummim. Is Saul going to come? Yes or no? Maybe Urim shows yes. Will the people give me up? You've read that account? Will the people give me up? Yes or no? So Urim and Thummim was yes or no. God, should I marry Jacob? Should I marry Teopista? To bring out Urim and what? Yes or no? So these objects were in the high priest's breastplate. Do you know that? Have you ever seen the high priest? Can you get an image quickly there of that? The high priest's breastplate. It had 12 colors, and within there was a Urim and Thummim. So it was a channel through which God communicated direction to Israel's leadership. Okay? So we don't know how they worked. But I believe there are yes and no. Number six. Special revelation is also communicated through historical events. You know, the great events in Israel's history, like the the crossing of the Red Sea, the plagues, these, they are beyond just God's display of power. They are revelatory in the sense that there's something they show about God. This is God disclosing himself through his people. Okay? So when you're beginning the Ten Commandments in Exodus 22, it begins with, I am the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. So it means the deliverance from Egypt became a special revelation moment. I'm the one who took you across the sea. Okay? That is me. So you see a breastplate here. The breastplate is that square thing in his neck with, not neck, at his chest, with 12 colors. And then you have the ephod, and it's called the ephod. The level of detail on this thing was astounding. Maybe one day we'll look at those things. When we have cleared all the basics, now we just want to. That's what they call that. When they say let's go deeper, that's what they mean. Well, now you start to study the high priest's garments. Now that is what? Going? Well, now you're first dealing with what happened on the Day of Atonement. You're not ready. You don't know that a high priest wore all that. Very elaborate guy, very good looking. Right? So, that's the breastplate where you had the Urim and Thummim. So, that is what special revelation is. Now, so all this special revelation, not all, for us, it's captured in the Bible. In the Bible, you have God revealing through events. You have God revealing himself through his many visions and dreams and all the other things we have talked about. Now God can speak and does speak to us today. So we're going to come to understand what canon means, what we call the Bible canon. Because canon means like measuring rod, it's a standard. So it means, in other words, we're saying all special revelation has to be measured with the canon, with the standard. So you can't just say, you wake up and say, oh, the Lord, I was in the spirit, and the Lord told me. No. Whatever the Lord told you, wonderful. We are going to bring it to the canon, which is the measuring rod. We are going to bring it to the special revelation, which he gave to all of us. And we shall deal with why the canon, eh? Why that canon, and why it came to be that. Okay? When we are looking at the scriptures, is that clear?